You're listening to On Shifting Ground. I'm Ray Suarez. Our shopping behavior has changed a lot over the past few years. During the pandemic, people who could worked from home, and online shopping became a go-to. E-commerce and tech expanded rapidly to keep up. Last year, when many of those same customers returned to the office, they gave up their subscriptions to streaming services, started returning to their offline lives. Now, the demand for digital products and services is waning. Amid declining sales, the squeeze of inflation, and hikes in interest rates, companies like Amazon, Meta, Microsoft, and Gap have announced major layoffs. But hidden behind the numbers is a story of an international workforce. What happens to tech workers on international visas when there are sharp and sudden shifts in demand for labor?
Foreign-born workers, especially in tech, have played an outsized role in shaping Silicon Valley and the broader tech industry in the U.S. today.
That's Pranav Dixit, a reporter for BuzzFeed who covers tech and Silicon Valley. While in India, Dixit got his start writing about tech's massive influence on his country's 1.4 billion residents. But when he moved to Silicon Valley, he saw firsthand the outsized impact of immigrants from Southeast Asia on the U.S. tech sector.
I'm from India, and traditionally studying math and science has just been like the default in my country. As soon as you graduate from high school, you study science. It's just you don't study anything else. And so there has always been a lot of demand from the U.S. tech industry for engineers, and there haven't been enough people in the U.S. to meet that demand, and which is why Silicon Valley tech companies have looked to India and China, and which is why the H-1B visa is so popular.
Immigrants from India make up nearly one-third of foreign-born workers in fields like healthcare and tech in the U.S., and they play a huge role in shaping innovation and the U.S. economy.
People from South Asia who dominate Silicon Valley at all levels, you know, there are engineers who work at Silicon Valley tech companies, but the companies themselves, which are the biggest companies in the world, and which also happen to be American companies, are all headed by South Asian CEOs, right? The CEO of Alphabet, Sundar Pichai, is from India. CEO of Microsoft, Satya Nadella, is from India. CEO of Adobe, which makes Photoshop, Shantanu Narayan, is from India. It's not a tech company, but the CEO of Starbucks is from India. And so Indians are some of the highest paid immigrant groups in the U.S. because of this. And it's quite extraordinary that they are all on visas and all of it can be taken away from them at any point.
Many foreign engineers and doctors rely upon H-1B visas to come here. But the program has major caveats. So what uncertainty awaits these workers who've been laid off by Amazon, Facebook, and other tech companies? For more, we go to Pranav Dixit. Welcome to On Shifting Ground.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Well, the jobless rate was soaring in the early pandemic, Pranav. What was happening in the job market in the tech sector at the same time?
So over the last 2 years, as we all moved online, there was a surge in people using online products and services over the last 2 years because of the pandemic. And what that meant was companies started hiring a lot to meet this additional demand. And over the last couple of years, companies thought that these trends were here to stay. But unfortunately, as we go back to normal, more or less, all the online activity is back at pre-pandemic levels now. And so that's a big reason why companies are laying off people, because they realize that maybe they overhired during the last couple of years.
Did the big familiar companies, household names really, along with lots of smaller ones, look overseas for new workers?
So American tech companies have traditionally hired a lot of people from overseas, especially from India and China, not just during the pandemic. This has been happening for the past few decades. And the most common work visa that most tech employees are on in the US is called the H-1B. Only 85,000 H-1B visas are given out annually through a lottery system. And the H-1B visa typically lasts for about 3 years with a possible extension of another three. And there's lots of data that shows that some of the biggest American tech companies, Meta, Amazon, Twitter, Lyft, Salesforce, hired at least 45,000 workers on H-1B visas over the last 3 years.
Well, that's good for those workers, aspiring engineers, programmers, designers. What happens if you lose that job, the job that one particular employer sponsored you for and you travel to the United States to take?
Right. So the H-1B is tied to your employer. Typically, an employer has to sponsor your visa, which means that you cannot work for any other employer unless your new employer takes over your existing H-1B visa, which is typically a process that's called a transfer and takes a couple of months at least to happen. If you're laid off from your current job and if you're on an H-1B visa, because the visa is tied to your employer, it's no longer valid if you don't have a job anymore. And so you have 60 days to find a new job if you're laid off with another employer who would sponsor your H-1B. If you can't find a job within 60 days, you basically have to leave the country, no matter how long you've been here.
Now, you mentioned that it takes some time to complete that transfer. Is the system flexible so that if you find a job late in your 60-day window, the clock kind of stops until you can do the necessary paperwork, make the necessary legal arrangements to start with that new employer?
Right. I'm not a lawyer. So as far as I know, as long as a new company applies for your visa to be transferred to them within the 60-day window, you should be good. You don't have to complete the transfer process within those 60 days. You just have to get another company to put in the application for the transfer within those 60 days. But 60 days in this economy, that's a pretty tight window to find a new job, especially when there have been thousands and thousands of layoffs and you have all your coworkers essentially competing for the same jobs that you're competing for. And so even in a situation when the economy is doing well, which it is not right now, 60 days is a pretty tight time frame to find a new job.
So we can assume, I guess, that some useful, talented, now experienced workers in California have had the rug pulled out. Are there people heading home? Do you know?
Yes, absolutely. I've had conversations in the course of my reporting with a lot of people who are really using this moment to reassess their relationship with the U.S. A lot of them came here many, many years ago and have families and houses and partners and kids going to school in the U.S. and find themselves in a situation now where they suddenly have to pack their bags and leave the country if they can't find anything in 60 days. The reason why this is so brutal is also tied to how permanent residency in the U.S. works. So I spoke about how the H-1B is valid for 3 years with a possible extension of another 3 years. So overall, you can be here on an H-1B visa for 6 years. Within those 6 years, if your employer doesn't apply for permanent residency, which is often known as a green card for you, you have to leave at the end of those 6 years. Most tech workers, especially the ones born in China and India, who work at Silicon Valley tech companies, are able to stay beyond those 6 years of an H-1B in the US because they are in line for a permanent residency. As long as you're in the line, you can stay in the country indefinitely. And the reason why you can be in line for multiple decades at this point, if you are a person who's born in India or China, is because there's enormous backlogs in those lines. And so if you're in line, it means that you haven't got your green card yet. And if you lose your job, it means you still have to go back if you can't find something else within 60 days.
I wonder whether once they end up back in Taipei, Chengdu, Bangalore, whether they actually aspire to come back to the United States? Are there people who end up sort of on a circuit back and forth? Or does the United States risk permanently losing some of this talent? You talked about that reassessment.
Yes, I think the last 10 years have been really good for the tech industry in the US. We haven't seen layoffs at this scale. We haven't seen any downturns, really. It's been boom time for Facebook and Google and Apple and Salesforce and all these companies. And I think there hasn't been a big reason for foreign-born workers in the US to really think about leaving the country until this point. And I think because of this, the US is losing some talent, perhaps permanently, perhaps in the future, they might come back. Based on my conversations with people in the course of my reporting so far, though, a lot of people are thinking, is it really worth staying in the country when I can go back to India or China and live a fairly comfortable life? Remote working is now pretty normal after the pandemic. A lot of people are now realizing that they can perhaps live in India and still work from India for the same US companies that they used to work for. They don't actually have to be here. And so I think people are really, really using this time to reevaluate what their priorities are and what their relationship is with both the US and their own country in many cases.
Should anybody have been surprised? I mean, given the hiring spree these companies went on as people moved to remote work, started ordering goods at home, as you mentioned, meals at home, doing banking from home, which put a lot of people in tech to work. There was going to be a return to normal, or at least normal-ish. Wasn't that always going to carry the risk of contraction, of layoffs, of a reexamination of workforce size at some of these, even the big profitable companies?
Yeah, you would think so. It seems pretty obvious in hindsight, now that we're hopefully on the other side of this pandemic. But it doesn't seem like the companies in question thought that. They thought that these trends were here to stay. In fact, Meta CEO Mark Zuckerberg said as much in his letter to Meta employees announcing the layoffs. Meta laid off more than 11,000 employees last year. And Zuckerberg said, you know, we thought these trends were here to stay, but unfortunately, they're not. And he took responsibility for it. So in hindsight, you know, it seems obvious that, hey, things were going to go back to normal, but it seems that the tech companies really misjudged that.
How long will it take? What will you be watching for to figure out whether this is a hiccup, a broad long-term retrenchment, or, as we've been discussing, the inevitable bump that comes with the ups and downs in the business cycle? What should we be looking for to understand the scope of these setbacks?
I think there is a realization now, after 10 years of sort of almost a reckless kind of growth, that companies need to grow sustainably, need to focus more on making profits, and not just throw money at a wall and see what sticks, which is kind of what has been happening in Silicon Valley for many, many years now. Companies are, startups especially, are finding it very hard to like raise venture capital. The funding is dried up. There's a lot of focus on companies growing sustainably and also making profits, not hiring recklessly, not spending money recklessly. I think we're going to see companies being more realistic in how they hire and, you know, what they aim to achieve.
Well, there are often winners in cases like this. Will companies that are starting up in a much lower cost environment in Canada, in China, in Taiwan, be the beneficiary of the market now suddenly awash in international talent that's looking for a gig?
Yeah, absolutely. And not just companies outside the US, you know, there's a lot of startups in the US that are suddenly awash with applications from candidates who formerly used to work at big tech companies. And they are very happy about it because they haven't had a chance to hire somebody from Google before or somebody from Meta before. And now they can just because thousands of those people need jobs. So I think it's not just startups in other countries. It's also a lot of smaller companies, you know, not the big tech companies, but a lot of companies that, you know, are not household names, even in the US, that are very excited by the opportunity to be able to potentially hire somebody who worked at a big tech company before.
Are the next Silicon Valleys benefited by this? The Austins, the Salt Lake Cities, places that have aspirations in this regard, but and are home to a lot of startups, as you mentioned. Does this help them?
I think it does, but when it comes to hiring people on visas, you know, it's the same story whether you're in Silicon Valley or whether you're in Austin. It doesn't really help anybody who needs a visa to stay in the US, right?
Let's talk a little bit more about the H-1Bs. There have been complaints about them for years. The companies that use them heavily were accused of being able to hire talent at lower rates, disadvantaging American-educated engineers and designers, disadvantaging American-born computer science graduates coming out of the big programs from around the country. There was also a complaint that it was a kind of indentured servitude, that it gave companies too much power once you were already in the country because of that requirement that they hold the visa, and now suddenly you had to scramble if they laid you off. Is any of this getting a second look as a result of this change in the marketplace?
Yeah, I think there have certainly been critics of the H-1B visa system within the U.S. There have been lots of people in the U.S. who do claim that the H-1B visas makes it harder for Americans to get jobs. And those voices have certainly become louder in the wake of all these layoffs in the tech industry. I think it's important to remember, though, that a lot of the claims that the critics make, such as, oh, it enables tech companies to hire people and pay them low wages, are not true. The H-1B is a visa that's only offered for like specialty occupations. Usually, specialty occupations include computer science, where American representation has historically been low. Americans typically do not study STEM, which stands for science, tech, engineering, math, as much as people from South Asia and China have historically studied. And so I don't think there's any merit to the allegation that the H-1B lets companies hire people and pay them low wages versus paying American workers a higher wage, because you do have certain minimums that the H-1B requires companies to pay employees that they hire on this visa. It is true, however, that when a company sponsors an H-1B visa, they do hold all the strings. It can be used as a tool to exploit anybody who holds that visa, because the company that sponsors your visa has the keys to your entire future in their hands. Often, H-1B employees don't speak up against workplace abuse or unfair treatment. They hesitate to ask for promotions. They don't want to make their managers angry. Just because your visa, if the company decides that it doesn't want to sponsor you anymore, it's goodbye. You have to find a job in 60 days or leave the country. And so it is true that the H-1B visa is sort of an indentured servitude in many cases. You know, it gives the company that sponsors you a lot of leverage against you, and it gives you almost no leverage against them.
Pranav, in 2023, what will you be looking for on your beat to get an idea of where the industry is moving, even at this time of big layoffs and retrenchment?
I'm going to have my eye on artificial intelligence. I think in 2022, we saw an explosion of AI. Just in the last 6 months, we saw ChatGPT and DALL-E, which are essentially applications that can generate images or text with a simple text prompt. I think it's the first time that AI of any sort has gone mainstream at this scale. Even normal people know what ChatGPT is, what DALL-E is. I think we saw that in the second half of 2022, and it's only going to accelerate in 2023. That's what I'm going to be keeping an eye on. That's what a lot of tech reporters are keeping an eye on about how AI is going to change our world and so many industries. And I think it's going to be an exciting space to watch.
Well, if machine learning makes its hoped for advances, you'll already have a way of knowing what I'm going to ask you in advance. So this will be easier the next time.
It will be. You won't even need me the next time. You can just plug these questions into ChatGPT or something, and it'll spit out the answers, and maybe it'll even spit out the answers in my voice. Who knows?
Pranav Dixit is with us. He covers the tech sector for BuzzFeed. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
You've been listening to On Shifting Ground, produced in partnership with KQED, with funding from listeners like you. If you want to support the program by becoming a member or by making a donation of any size, please go to worldaffairs.org/donate. We have an in-person program this week at World Affairs about the humanitarian crisis in Nagorno-Karabakh. It's free to attend. Check out the World Affairs website to sign up. Today's episode was produced by Elise Manoukian and Andrew Stelzer. Mixing and mastering by Matteo Schimpf. Additional production and engineering were provided by Rob Spate. KQED's Jim Bennett is our technical supervisor. Philip Yun is CEO of World Affairs. Our music is from Blue Dot Sessions. I'm Ray Suarez. Thanks for listening.